Welcome to the Ortho Eval Pal podcast, where we can help you build confidence with your orthopedic evaluation and management skills. We hope you enjoy the show. And now, for your host, Paul Marquis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 333 of the Ortho Eval Pal podcast. I am your host, Paul Marquis, PT, and today we're going to be talking about lumbar radiculopathy evaluation. We'll be going over signs and symptoms of lumbar radiculopathy. We'll differentiate between sciatica and radiculopathy, discuss the differential diagnoses related to radiculopathy, and we'll give you a few tips to optimize your evaluation process. But before we get started, I want to talk to you about our sponsor, Tread Labs. They're an innovative over-the-counter insole brand that's a great alternative to custom orthotics. These insoles come in four arch heights for a customized fit and can also be fitted with adjustable metatarsal pads. I consistently recommend them to my patients because I use them myself and so does my family. Tread Labs also recently launched a sandal line that has the same arch support technology as their orthotics built right into the footbed. Simply email hello@treadlabs.com and mention my name to get a free sample. Okay. Welcome to the show, everyone. Boy, I'll tell you, I just had a great weekend giving a cervical and lumbar spine course in Norway, Maine. It was a live course, and I want to give a huge thank you to Amy and Scott Bottomley from Stevens Memorial Hospital for hosting me. They are the greatest hosts. They do a beautiful job at getting everything set up with the space and bringing in food in the morning and things like that, so I really appreciate that. Thank you, folks. With that being said, you know, part of the course was about lumbar spine, and I thought I would give you a little two-part series on the podcast about lumbar radiculopathy. So today, we're going to be talking about evaluation. Next week, we'll be talking about treatment. I think we need to first differentiate, though, before we get any further, between sciatica and radiculopathy. And I've been known to interchange these myself. But when it comes to educating your patients about it, I think it's important that they understand that they aren't quite the same, but they look alike, just so that they understand, you know, where their problem is coming from. And so remember, the sciatic nerve starts where the ends of the five spinal nerves, L4 through S1, converge together. They travel down that posterior buttock a little bit, inferior to the piriformis most of the time, sometimes over, and very seldomly through it. So then it goes down the posterior thigh until it branches into the tibial and common peroneal nerves just in the posterior popliteal region. So pain in that segment or area is often described as sciatica. So sciatica can occur because of nerve root compression and inflammation in the lumbar spine. It also can come from direct damage to the sciatic nerve or even from poor sciatic nerve mobility. All right. So some people will say, gee, when I kind of like long sit with my legs out in front of me, if my knees are bent, my feet go numb or my legs go numb and I get this kind of this pain going down my legs, it may not be coming from your back. It may just be coming from that sciatic nerve, that segment that is not gliding and sliding very well and just getting too much stretch because we know nerves do not like to be stretched or compressed. Now, to our topic, radiculopathy. Radiculopathy is when pain, numbness, tingling, weakness comes from nerve root compression or irritation at the lumbar spine. So most often from compression in the intervertebral foramen. From a herniated disc, it could be just swelling or inflammation in that space. Maybe you have an enlarged or hypertrophied facet where there's a spur that is going into that intervertebral foramen and hitting on the nerve root. And we can even see this in people who have lumbar spinal instability, where it is now getting some compression onto that nerve root, but usually happens in that intervertebral foramen. Now that we have that separation between sciatica and radiculopathy out of the way, let's just talk about what you'll find in patients who have lumbar radiculopathy. Most common signs and symptoms will be pain and or paresthesias going down the leg and into a certain pattern, okay? So it's also very common to have weakness. Now, if somebody has weakness along with this radiculopathy, you need to be a little more observant of the patient and kind of it becomes a little more serious here, because when we start to develop some weakness, that means we're getting quite a bit of nerve root irritation or compression, and that can become a problem. So remember, we're talking nerve root compression, so there's going to be some sort of a pattern of pain, paresthesia, or weakness here. So if you compress an S1 nerve root, it is going to go down a certain part of the leg, okay? So you need to remember that if somebody has a radiculopathy. So if a patient says that the whole leg is going numb, or maybe they have weakness and that weakness is in multiple muscle groups, like I had a patient one time who came in and he was having a lot of leg pain, and so I did a straight leg raise test and it really wasn't bothering him all that much. But he did have a lot of pain around the hip, a lot of pain running down the lateral side of the leg. So I asked him to do a straight leg raise, and he couldn't lift his leg off the table. And I placed him on his side, and I said, can you lift your leg off of the other one? So basically hip abduction, and he could not even take it off the other leg. And then I rolled him onto his stomach, and he could not lift the leg off the table either. Come to find out, he had cancer in and around that hip, and it was affecting multiple areas. And so if it affects more than one muscle group or more than a pattern, you need to be looking at that a little bit more seriously. And then you could be dealing with something more than just a nerve root. So it could be vascular. I've seen people with vascular issues who have kind of like globalized numbness down their legs or globalized pain across different dermatomes and with weakness across myotomes. So radiculopathy is going to be more likely to follow a real specific pattern, kind of like, a road on a map. Now, let's steer back onto radiculopathy, because we could really go into all kinds of tangents here. I want to talk a little bit about mechanisms of injury. Now, from my experience, radiculopathy can come from all kinds of things. I've seen hundreds and hundreds of patients with lumbar radiculopathy, but from my experience, I would dare say that the most common mechanism of injury is seen in people who sit for a long period of time. So we know that sitting for a long time can increase your risk of back pain, but it seems like those folks that sit for a long time, they sit and take a long car ride, maybe 6 hours. That coupled with maybe some roughness, okay? So they're riding on a bumpy road, or maybe they're in a skid steer which has, or a forklift which has absolutely no shock absorption, and they feel every bump that they hit, when they go from cement into a tractor trailer, or maybe they hit a pothole out in the yard while they're lifting a heavy load, but they're sitting there for long periods of time, or there's a lot of vibration associated with it. And you couple that with, doing maybe a lifting task after getting out of that seated position for a long period of time. That seems to be probably the most common thing that I've seen in my neck of the woods. And in if we look at the geography and what people do for work, and you might see different mechanisms where you live, all right? But I've seen everything from somebody stepping off of a small step, landing on their leg with full knee extension, and having a massive herniated disc, to people who are sneezing, just riding on a snowmobile for several hours, hitting a few bumps, or maybe people get stuck with their snowmobile and they try to lift the back of it, and it's just too much load for them after having been sitting for a long period of time. So I've really seen it all. And oftentimes it's not a real big mechanism of injury. It's not a real big dramatic deal. Or they'll come in and they'll say, yeah, I just kind of, I did a little this, did a little that. It was nothing specific. Next day I woke up, I had this pain in my leg. And so trying to isolate a mechanism, it's not like an ACL, where I was turning in one direction, my foot, went to one direction, my knee gave out inward, I fell down, it gave out, it's kind of classic. Lumbar radiculopathy is not so classic. So trying to figure out the mechanism, one particular mechanism, just isn't going to cut it in regards to the evaluation part of that. So I want to next jump into discussing pain patterns. pain, you know, pain patterns, patient complaints, and then some of the copycat diagnoses that can make your evaluation a little more difficult. And I might even throw in a few examples for you like I just did. We often think of radiculopathy as something that happens all the way down the leg, you know, especially like an S1 nerve root compression where you'll get posterior glute pain, posterior calf pain, heel pain, lateral foot pain. It kind of goes all the way down the leg. It may not always follow that particular pattern. You know, take L5, for example, you'll get some posterior lateral glute pain. Then it'll go down and cross over down by the lateral hip. I want you to remember that part. Down the lateral thigh, lateral calf, over the front of the ankle, and toward the big toe, second toe area. You would not believe how many people I've seen who have received cortisone injections, treatment, manipulation for greater trochanteric bursitis or lateral hip pain who have an L5 nerve root compression. So you simply, you know, take this patient, put them on their back and do a straight leg raise test, and they'll start to have this reproduction of lateral hip pain. And that gets missed constantly. So it's important that you put your evaluation skills to work here to try to tease out if this has a lookalike or not. All right. L4, anterolateral thigh pain. And then that goes to the anteromedial tibial region, kind of crosses that knee. So we've seen some people with L4s, you know, come in and they think they have a knee problem. Some folks, you know, it can look like myralgia parasthetica because it kind of goes over that anterolateral thigh region. Although myralgia parasthetica comes from 2-3, it can still look like it. So they will present differently. A myralgia parasthetica patient will not have a loss of patella tendon reflex, okay? They'll not have weakness into dorsiflexion. So you can tease that one out just like that. Look at L3, where that pain will come over the anterior thigh. You know, people with severe hip arthritis have, you know, pain from the groin all the way down the anterior thigh, over the quad, down to the knee. So you might think that somebody with an L3 might have hip arthritis. They might have a quad strain. They might have knee arthritis because they're having pain in that knee, but it's oftentimes just referred or radiating from L3. So again, you want to try to tease that out. So taking a look at those, looking, always thinking outside of the box, you know, for those copycats, just to make sure they don't bite you in the end so that you can really get a good evaluation and give them good treatment. This is where you need to really put that lower quadrant neuroscreening skill to the test, and that will, you know, prove to be so much more beneficial in the future. When we're evaluating radiculopathy, we shouldn't forget our straight leg raise test and our Braggart's test. Okay, so, you know, typically if you get somebody between 30 and 50 degrees of straight leg raise and they have this reproduction of their familiar symptoms or their concordant signs, then that's a pretty good sign they're getting neural tension. And you back them off a little bit, dorsiflex the foot. If that reproduces those same symptoms, then you need to be thinking, you know, nerve root compression and radiculopathy. Now, the straight leg raise test and Braggart's test work really well for L4, L5, S1, but they don't work very well for an L2 and L3. So flip that patient over and do a prone knee flexion test. And I can put a couple of videos in there for you folks in regards to the straight leg raise test, Braggart's, and the prone knee flexion test. But flip that patient over, flex that knee to see if that reproduces that common pain that they have. And if they have an L2, L3 nerve root compression, you'll see this very interesting reproduction of that pain. You know, we should expect stretching in the quad, but do the other side and see if it's more intense on one side than the other, okay? And they might even try to wiggle away from you and kind of turn themselves to the side to try to get away from that discomfort. But again, that's just another way of producing some neural tension through that lateral femoral nerve and into L2 and L3 nerve roots, and that'll give you a little tug up there and reproduce that kind of radiculopathy type of presentation. So I know that was quite a bit on evaluation in regards to lumbar radiculopathy. Next episode, we're going to talk about the approach to treating lumbar radiculopathy. So how do we treat what we just found in our evaluation? We'll talk about what works, what doesn't work. I'll really give you a lot of tips and pearls here from my experience. Also talk about, you know, what signs we need to look at if the patient may be surgical, and so much more. So please make sure you stay tuned for next week so that we can kind of complement today's episode with the treatment of what we find in the evaluation. So thank you so much for being with me today. Tell your friends and colleagues about OEP. Have a great day. Be kind to each other and take care.
We hope you've enjoyed the show. For some more awesome content, go to orthoevalpal.com. Can't wait to see you there.